Hey everyone, welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast, where we dive into the people, stories, and iconic moments that have helped make sneakers a global phenomenon. If you've ever told someone that you like their kicks, then you're in the right place. Before we lace up this episode, here's a little teaser for you. Stick around to the end of each episode for the last shot question. It's a chance to test your sneaker knowledge and engage with our community. I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly two decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter for a weekly deep dive into the biggest topics in the sneaker business. All right, now that the business is taken care of, grab your favorite pair of kicks and let's get started with the episode.
Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move!
Against Gill, the crowd on its feet. Allen for the win!
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
Welcome back to the Sneaker History Podcast. My name's Nick Engvall, and I'm here with my guys, Robbie and Mike, to talk some sneakers tonight. How you guys doing?
Good, man. How you guys doing today?
I am great. Killing it.
Yeah, doing pretty good. Yep. So we got some interesting topics. I'm actually excited. We were just talking about how we're going to try to attempt to avoid offending anybody in the future of this podcast. So stick around for that to see if we actually succeed.
Get at me personally. Don't front on the page, but if you have any opinions, you can find us individually.
Yeah, don't hunt us down or anything like that. Yeah. Sorry.
no, I think... before we get into that... I didn't see any new reviews this week, although I saw the numbers went up a little bit. I didn't actually see any new reviews on iTunes. So if you get a chance,
20, though.
Yeah, we got 20. So we appreciate everybody that's dropping reviews. That's pretty awesome. I think I'm just going to up the ante and say, if you put your handle and maybe your shirt size in an iTunes review for us, we'll send you a t-shirt. I got some extra Sneaker History t-shirts here. So, if you get a chance, take 30 seconds, drop us a review, and even better is if you just tag us on Instagram or something so we make sure we see it. But we appreciate everybody's support. It's been really dope. I got a couple of direct messages just thanking us for pushing forward the conversation, and that's what we're trying to do, is just kind of like keep everybody in the loop, but also not the same old that you hear from all over the internet. We want to make it a little different, give a little bit more insight than hopefully you're used to. So appreciate you listening.
Yeah, thanks for all the kind words, everybody.
Thank you. Man, we're 20 episodes in, by the way, guys.
Yeah, episode 20, man. It's crazy.
I thought we were 15. No lie. Five behind.
So I want to start off with mainly because we're fresh off of the Game of Thrones finale, and I know Robbie and I are probably still like decompressing and processing all this stuff. Not sure if we're mad or sad or happy.
I'm salty. So,
but I think it's interesting that obviously Adidas did the whole Ultra Boost Game of Thrones thing, you know, at the beginning of the series, season 8, right? But it's interesting that they're doing another Air Max 4 GOT, Air Max AM 4, Adidas made for GOT, Game of Thrones release, I think next week. And then just saw today, I missed it somehow, but, Toy Story has an Ultra Boost 2019 coming out, for Toy Story 4. Man, Toy Story 4?
Right.
It's crazy. Although that's definitely one of my favorite show or favorite movies.
I never saw 3, so I'm gonna have to Toy Story game up.
They're all pretty good. But I just think it's really interesting that we're seeing a lot of this like almost like promotional footwear being made. I'm not mad at it. I like that the brands are getting more involved, but it kind of
Vans has a Game of Thrones. No, Harry Potter. My bad.
Yeah. Harry Potter. Yep. What are you guys thinking about this stuff?
It's cool. I mean, it just melds the world together, like the fandom from these shows with the fandom of sneakers. It's just super cool to see the worlds combining, and you kind of get the average person who may not think anything about sneakers will see their favorite show in the shoe, and they might as well get in line for this one sneaker just because it reminds them of this character, or so on and so forth. So I think it's cool. I mean, I'm always a fan for some comic book related shoe or some movie related shoe. So I say keep doing it.
Man, for me, it's like seeing all those like Velcro Spider-Man shoes and like Toy Story, just like little kid shoes you would see at like, I don't have any kids. So I don't know where to shop for kids' shoes. Small children footwear, like on a grown man tip. It's like, ooh, you really like having those Toy Story Buzz Lightyear light up heel shoes when you were 8, but now you can come up on some Toy Story Adidas as a grown man. So, or woman, whatever you're feeling. But it's super interesting how, like, this generation, like, I'm a millennial. I think we're all millennials. I think, Nick, you're on that cusp, not to put you on blast, but I think 81 is millennial cusp.
Yeah, I might be slightly on the other side of that, but I still live like a millennial. I had avocado toast today, so.
No, you had avocado.
Oh, no.
You're on that next level.
Yeah, avocado 9, that's right.
It's like people our age, and typically who have a collector mentality or a nostalgic mentality, are really being catered to. And I say the past 15 years, we've really had a shift from like more professional, rugged or tough shoes to more, like softer tones and softer themes and more creative themes and themes that go along with like nostalgia. So it's a good shift. It gives me an excuse to wear like Pug t-shirts and like Boy Meets World t-shirts with like some throwback shoes. So I think it's really fun. I'll leave it there. It's fun.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's one of those things where like, it's also, at least with these three examples, right? It's all kind of like nerdy stuff, and we're all just like sneaker nerds at the end of the day. And then we have our other things that we're into, right? Like I'm a stupid, huge Star Wars fan, so like those kind of things being tied together for me just makes it that much better. It's like all of my childhood being, putting my face in like, so many different choices and ways to kind of relive those things. So I totally agree with you. I think it's cool to see, like you said, even a little bit further, a little bit deeper, just seeing like the colors, the themes, the kind of like, not in a bad way, but like the childish nature of the creativity that's been going on in the past, even in the past, like maybe 2-3 years, where that to me is, I'm trying to like, live like a kid until I'm 110 years old and I can't do it anymore. So I love seeing this kind of stuff come together. And I think on the business side, I think it's really cool to see the brands getting out in front of these things, because a lot of times, you see the stuff come after the fact, right? And it's not picking on anything, but like just use the Kyrie Friends, the Friends Kyrie 5 as an example, right?
Yeah.
Like that shoe is super dope to me.
Yeah.
But that whole concept and story could have been done, 20 years ago when Friends was still on air, and it would have been so much more, impactful. And it would have reached people outside of the sneaker world, where now it's kind of like, all right, it's an official collab. It's got all the branding. It's got all the like the imagery for it was super dope, I thought. But the fans of that show are completely separate from the sneaker world at this point. So I like that the timing on this kind of stuff is like now and in the moment kind of.
Yeah.
Perfect. It catches all the nostalgia everywhere for anybody. No one can beat nostalgia. It's always going to catch you some way, some form, and you're going to be just primed to put whatever that is in your house just because it reminds you of some moment in time. So it's always going to be here, and I think it's always something cool to kind of relieve the pressure. But just everything, every time we see something, it's like, oh, got to get that, because it's the cool thing. But it's awesome to see something that's because it just makes you happy. Like, it genuinely makes you happy to have that shoe because it reminds you of that TV show or, like I say, some childhood memories. It's really cool.
Is it just me, or every time you see the French shoe, you go, dun, 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 dun?
Yep.
You just can't not do it.
Yeah, it's like the Game of Thrones theme song, man. It's like you can't even like look at anything without that like intro song popping into your head.
Yeah. Oh man. But, I don't want to bring it up, but dude, that episode sucks.
I was gonna ask you guys how y'all feel about that. I'm the one here that doesn't watch Game of Thrones, but I've heard so many angry people over the last like 12 hours.
It's like you're really going to kill that lady. Well, I don't want to get too specific, but you're going to kill Daenerys and then put Jon in jail. And everyone's
spoiler alert. Yeah, yeah.
They're just going to be like, oh, cool. Bran's the right choice with like no confrontation, no nothing. Just, oh, okay. You're right. Like, good point. I never thought of that. And it's just, okay. No.
Yeah. I enjoyed it, but I also think that, it would have been like, I was thinking about it afterwards, thinking like it would have been impossible for them to do something that I was 100% in agreement with, right? Like they almost set themselves up for this in the way that this last whole season has gone, where the timing was like your battle between the living and the dead was like the like pinnacle moment in the entire series, in my opinion. You'd been building up to that moment, and then you had how many, like, 3 episodes or even 4 after that? And I think that's where, like, how do you even, as a writer on the series, I imagine they're just like, what are we doing with it? Like, now we just have to, like, put people in place and make sure that it ends in 6 episodes.
But it's like when you gorge yourself on a plate of cookies, there's, like, 6 cookies there, and you eat like 5.5 of them, and you go back in a couple hours and you expect to be satisfied off a half cookie. And it's just,
yep. Just can't do it.
Maybe that's too personal of a story, but I mean,
no, spot on. So switching it up, now that we've spoiled some Game of Thrones, if you're not a game, maybe we'll have to put Game of Thrones spoiler alert. But I wanted to talk about something that you brought up, Mike, because it's definitely something that I've been seeing and thinking about. But why don't you talk about the LeBron 16 and the hot lava Agassi inspired stuff?
Yeah, I mean, as everyone who's been following sneakers for the past, you know, like, I guess 2 years now, LeBron started the LeBron Watch, where he's been pretty much revitalizing his own line by bringing back old sneakers, nostalgic sneakers from Nike's archives, and mashed them up with his, first starting off with the LeBron 15s, and then now continue the theme with the LeBron 16s. Not too long ago, I would say probably no more than 4 weeks ago, we got the LeBron, you know, amalgam with the Air Trainer 3 Medicine Ball, and now we're coming up on the LeBron 16 by the Air Tech Challenge 2, the hot lava colorway. Personally, it's really cool. I mean, I don't see anybody having any problems with those classic sneakers. My question is, though, I've noticed now that once the LeBron is announced, right on his heels is an announcement for the actual retro sneaker. As you know, the LeBron 16 Medicine Ball came out. If not the same weekend, a few days later, the actual Air Trainer 3 came out in the Medicine Ball colorway, and now we have the same happening with the Air Tech Challenge. I wonder, is this a ploy, or not a ploy, I shouldn't say that, but a plan, a marketing plan by Nike to revitalize LeBron sneaker, or is it kind of inverse? Is the LeBron sneaker revitalizing the classic sneaker? Because me and the guys were talking a little earlier, and noticed that you can't find any of the Air Trainer 3s on the shelves anywhere. I can still find a LeBron 16 medicine ball, but the actual sneaker that inspired it is nowhere to be found. I got lucky and found a pair floating around one of my local shoe shops, and I'm going to assume that the same thing is going to happen with the Air Tech Challenge. So I kind of want to get you guys' opinion to see how you lean on it. Is it the LeBron that's more popular now, or is it going to be the, like I said, the classic sneaker?
I mean, I don't know where to take that. I mean, you're definitely right on the inspired shoes. I mean, I guess the shoe that inspires the LeBron going quicker. I haven't think to like the LeBrons when they're incorporating his older design, the LeBron 3 Superman. Like, those sold out pretty quick, but I believe due to like preemptive purchasing by resellers from a lot of it. But then the LeBron 3 actual Supermans, those were like, and still are, held their value nicely comparatively. In today's sneaker climate, they've held their value nicely. So it's like an afterthought. Like, the LeBron starts the thought, but when it comes to digging into the pocket, it's an afterthought. Like, for me, this Tech Challenge 2, like Hot Lava re-release, like, those just came out in 2014 and they sat at outlets. Like, they didn't do anything cool in terms of like really revitalizing a heavy conversation about Andre Agassi or anything. But it's just like, I think these ones are going to do the same thing. I think both shoes are going to sit, but by and large, the original shoe sells and does a lot better than the LeBron that it inspires.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. It's kind of interesting, you know, thinking of like the medicine ball example. I think the first one of that color was the Don C, right? The Legacy 312,
that was the first one to do it.
Which didn't really do as well as I would have expected. I mean, I think it ended up, it's got to be for below retail on StockX or GOAT or wherever, I'm sure. But like you said, the Trainer 3 like surprised a lot of people, I think, in that it sold out. Where like the LeBron 16, I came across those at the outlets, not discounted heavily or anything, but they were just available at least. I think it's interesting too, like the Hot Lava thing, you know, was also another Legacy 312, right? But that shoe has been hit or miss every time it's come out, I think. But I personally, I've had pairs multiple times, but I just wasn't satisfied with the quality that it came out with. So I'm hoping that this new version actually, like, is nice. From the first pictures that I saw, it looks like it's done better than most of the previous versions, which, you know, to your point, Robbie, I think that's a huge reason why that shoe ended up sitting at outlets and going so cheap, basically, because like they were like almost like pre-creased, and I think you can only get away with that when it's a Jordan 1 or a Dunk or something like that, where people are just like, I'm just going to use this shoe as like a beater anyway. Or it's just it, like, people don't care about creases in certain shoes, where like you're looking at a shoe like that where it doesn't look better, in my opinion, when it's creased up. But it's kind of interesting to think about how LeBron's line, in my opinion, has helped these retros more than the Don C stuff. And in theory, like, I'm sure they thought the Don C collabs would be, or, you know, Don C's signature shoe, however that technically is there. I think they would have expected that to do better, at least from like a, you know, hype standpoint, right? Like, Don C kind of has that you know, super influencer, you know, vibe about him, and in theory, at least, they should have sold, his shoes should have sold better. But I think that LeBron, I think it's interesting that LeBron is going this way with his signature shoes, because I don't know for sure, but I would assume that every year of LeBron's shoes, there's been more shoes available to the public. And by doing it this way, yeah, it almost guarantees that you have a base level of appeal to that nostalgic, you know, driven consumer. So
yeah,
that to me is a really interesting thing and something to watch. And I'll be excited to see. I don't know that both of these will end up sitting. I mean, I think like you mentioned the reseller stuff, I think that there's just a little bit of possibility there where you'll probably see a lot of people buy it and then it'll probably be going for retail or just below within a couple of weeks after it comes out.
Yeah. So to kind of get a little bit LeBron fanboyish, I think he's the perfect vessel to do things like this because he's always, I mean, they didn't release, but like the Heroes Pack from like the LeBron 7. Mm-hmm. Like he's always had he's a longtime Nike fan also. He's not just like LeBron for Nike. He like LeBron is Nike. That was really discombobulated. That makes sense. So I think it's like he really idolized these athletes, the kind of on the topic of like influx of LeBron colorways dropping, like it was at an all-time high in like the 10, 11, 12. I would even say it was like 10 and 11. And then like 12, 13, 14, they realized maybe the design wasn't there. So they kind of scaled back the releases. But since the 15, it's gone back on full blast. Whatever they can tie to LeBron, they're going to tie to the releases. We're definitely seeing a shift towards more and more colorways and subsequently more and more partnered and, you know, using past inspired releases. So I think that's enough on that topic.
Yeah. So just like thinking about that, have you guys bought a like new signature model or a retro more recently?
Me? It's been a retro. I haven't bought a new signature since, I guess it'd have to be the Kyrie 5, but most recently it's been retros.
I've been super blessed because I haven't, like, out of my own pocket, I haven't bought any new signatures, but through the plug, like Jordan 30, like 33s, Westbrook's, the new Paul George, new LeBron, the new Kobe. Like I've had pretty much every new signature shoe. But I was talking about it with my girlfriend, like those shoes, and like I'm gonna sound really bougie here, but of like sneakerheads of like our caliber who like really collect a lot of shoes, you're not gonna rock a new signature shoe day to day. I rock it because I like the sport of basketball and I want something that's sporty and comfortable and new like twice a week, once a week for like an everyday wear. So I mean, I think it comes down to two camps. Like, do you really consider yourself like a sneakerhead and read all the blogs and pay attention to resale value? Because you're probably going to be shifted by influence of many kinds towards retros. But if you just like Russell Westbrook and you want a pair of basketball shoes, you're going to buy it like the new, you want the new, the quote unquote new LeBron, the new Kobe. So they're going to buy the new models. So it's kind of like, where do you consider yourself on the sneakerhead spectrum and where do you want to put your money? So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Like, I think the last signature that I bought was Paul George. And then I think I bought like in the same week, I picked up a pair of Kobe's cause they were discounted. Like the Kobe ones.
The Exodus. I got the Exodus at the outlet just cause like, hey, why not?
So you're hanging around there. You might as well.
Yeah. So I'm going to toss that question to the listeners. I'm curious, like, what was the last shoe that you guys picked up? Was it a more modern signature model or a retro product? Not necessarily just the ones we're talking about, but just in general, I'm kind of curious because obviously, like, you know, sneaker history, we focus on a lot of the nostalgia of things, but I also just love that, like, that all of that nostalgia is such a crossover into modern new product too. So what do you guys think? What was your recent pickup? How does it fall on that? I guess like shifting gears into kind of the main thing we wanted to talk about tonight. Oh man. So basically, like, there's an article on CNBC.
Liberal.
Oh, we're gonna start that way.
No, there's a basically there's a, you know, there's this whole trade war with China going on, supposedly. And recently 170 shoe retailers and brands, including Nike, Under Armour, Adidas, Foot Locker, UGG, and Off-Broadway Shoe Warehouse, chimed in on a letter to the president, asking him to stop the raising tariffs on footwear imported from China. So, I mean, the crazy thing that we were talking about earlier is, like, it just doesn't, it's amazing all the different things that are going to get hit with these, like, 25% tariffs if the threat of these tariffs actually comes to fruition. It's basically sneakers, sandals, golf shoes, boots, ski shoes. And just to put it into perspective, they basically say that, like, a $50 pair of skate shoes would increase to $65 and some change. A typical hunting boot would go from $190 to $248 and some change. And a popular running shoe would go from $150 to $206 and some change. So,
insanity.
Yeah, it's a huge amount of money if you think about it. And obviously the brands aren't going to foot that bill, and they're just going to pass that along to consumers. So I'm just kind of curious. In my mind, I couldn't wrap my head around how in the world did, like, all of these companies just get together. I mean, I know there's, like, the footwear distributors and retailers organization or whatever, but it's crazy to me that all these like competing brands are just like, yeah, this is no good for anyone.
I believe the proper term is the Sneaker Justice League.
Yeah, exactly.
Put the bad signal out for them. But I mean, it's kind of one of those things, like, we're not going to get this far into this, but the saying, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So, hey, look, they're in the same boat at this point. They all know it's a common threat to their business. So the best thing they can do is join forces to get their voices heard and then be competitive once that's done, because this won't be good for anybody, any brand, if this, you know, comes to pass.
I mean, so there's so many bigger problems in the world with sneakers. Like, I'm going to preface what I'm about to say with that. I'm not 1,000% believe sneakers on the spectrum of life quite low. But when you think about it, so many things that the current administration has implemented or changed, that's a lot of people, but a lot of people also have a hard time. If I want to use this thing, being in somebody else's shoes. So maybe having your wallet get hit every week when you go to buy your retro shoes, like, that'll get people more aware about kind of some higher level things going on in the world. So it sucks for us, but at the same time, in the same breath, maybe it sucking will make us start being more active in not only tariffs, but other things in the country right now. That's the most PC I could say that. So I hope I did right.
Now, I mean, that's a true statement though.
Yeah. I think you make some good points. Yeah, it is like, at the end of the day, like, sneakers is, you know, frivolous in the big picture. And, mm-hmm. I think that the thing about it is, for me, looking at this and seeing, like, you know, one of the stats is the U.S. imported $11.4 billion worth of footwear from China last year. And I just think about, like, you know, $11.4 billion worth of footwear from China, that's a huge amount of people that work in either, you know, working in a mall store at a Foot Locker or Finish Line, or in a distribution center for Nike or Adidas, or, you know, wherever it is along the line of, like, the footwear business. There's so many people that that are, you know, making a living directly or indirectly from the footwear industry in general, that it's scary to think that you could potentially just double up the cost of, you know, some of these shoes by, for in my opinion, for really no reason, right? It's like, I understand, you know, I understand that there's always the, you know, kind of machismo of politics, right? Where nobody wants to back down, you know, it's like playing chicken in the street driving or something, right? Like the tough guy always is perceived to, you know, be better or whatever, you know, but at the end of the day, like when you have this many people reaching out, I mean, 170 companies, you know, adding their name to that list is that's a huge amount of people saying, hey, look, we need to knock this off. And thinking about how many people that, I mean, that I can just think of that are, you know, close to me or friends of mine that potentially could be impacted by this if it were to happen and if it were to be something that was sustained. Because that's the other thing, like, it causes problems for everyone in the short term where, yeah, like, the brands are going to have to pay, you know, that tariff to, you know, sell their shoes, right? So they lose a bunch of profit off the top, which then takes, you know, money out of the investors' pockets, which, you know, they're not, in our society, they're not tangible the way someone that works in a store is, but they're also people that make a living through those investments somehow, some way, right? You know, and I think that it would be ignorant to not look at all of those aspects of what this type of thing actually does, because even those people that, you know, like, there are people that I know that don't by any means live out of their means, don't have money stacked away, but still use some of their income to invest in, you know, companies like Nike and Adidas and Foot Locker, because those companies have done a good job over the past, you know, 15, 20 years, depending on the company, ever returning on their investment and making people money. And, you know, whether you're standing in a store for 8 hours a day or taking the money that you earn in another job and putting it towards something else to make money, the same way a reseller does, I think that, you know, this is just a hugely dangerous slope that we're potentially about to head down. But yeah, man, I don't know. Like, looking at the stats, I'm just like, it's almost like freaking me out. It's so crazy.
Yeah. And I was sitting there actually thinking just kind of what the impact would look like. And this is pure speculation and like pure just kind of my own thoughts. But I see it starting like this, because it's not going to only affect the base market of like, hey, we're going to, you know, Foot Locker, Champs, so on and so forth, and pick up this pair of sneakers. But it's going to also have a fallout to the secondary sources. But it's going to be, I feel like, a weird effect, because if this were to pass, initially, people are going to be really, they're going to be turned off to go into stores and purchase the sneakers. But those, you know, StockX, Goats, Flight Clubs, who already have their supply of sneakers, who aren't affected by the tariff, are going to have a heavy influx of business, because people are going to be able to buy those sneakers for what may be the same amount as buying a GR at that point, because they're not going to be affected directly by the tariff. What's going to happen is, I feel like those shoes are all going to get bought out, and then that can just bottom out their business, because now people won't be buying the shoes from the store to resell, because they know it's not going to happen anymore. So it can just be it'd be good for resale in the beginning, then tear them apart at the end, because once their stock is gone, their leverage is gone, because the starting price is going to be so great that people aren't going to be willing to buy those resale, for those resale prices anymore.
Well, so like, we're talking all about speculative numbers. So like 50 will become 65, et cetera. But Nick kind of started to talk about it. What it comes down to is like, when prices rise on a product, companies don't want to burden or hurt their investors' investments. So that's all going to get passed down to the consumer. It's like anything in economics, it always gets down to us. So it could start off at like a $15 hike, but talk to get more crazy. It could then be like a $30 hike. Like we're thinking just shoes, but like the rubber on your car wheels that you use to get to work every day, those could be affected. Like sneakers are just like our most tangible conversation point, obviously, because we're a sneaker podcast. Like that makes sense. Everybody should have maybe, you know, keep their ears and eyes open a little bit and just do your research in the coming months. Like pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think like to your point, Robbie, like that it's almost, you know, I mean, there's a huge snowball effect and it's almost, you know, there's so much value in consistency and stability in a market that allows businesses, especially in footwear, where, you know, let's be real, like the turnaround time to make a pair of shoes is probably still at best, you know, with the exception of some certain manufacturing techniques, is probably between 9 and 18 months. So on one hand, if let's say your favorite brand says, oh, snap, we've got to like adjust for this new tariff. Now we're going to raise the cost. To your point, they could say, okay, we're not going to burden our shareholders. We're going to push that on to the consumers. But the other side of that is that the talks of these kind of things and the back and forth between China and the US in regards to these tariffs also makes investors hesitant, which in turn can have people pulling money out of those brands or, you know, maybe less bullish on the actual stock market when it comes to footwear in general, which footwear has been really good in, you know, I'm generalizing, but like for the most part, a lot of the companies in footwear have done really well in the past like 4 to 5 years. And if people start to not feel good about it, then that drives all of those numbers down, whether that's, you know, the money that's going in or the, you know, overall value of the stocks for a company like a Foot Locker, say, which, you know, a lot of these companies even pay dividends on those. And I think that's even crazier because now the brands are forced to not only act, you know, almost like reactively and to not lose those investors, but they're also doing that to the detriment of the consumers. So they're almost forced to be in this position where they have to like almost screw over both sides of their, you know, partners in a sense. But I think, you know, like this Footwear Distributors and Retailers of America organization is, you know, they've been around for a long time and the letter obviously is very firm, I guess, in saying like that it needs to immediately remove footwear from these tariffs because their example, I forget what the numbers were, but like a lot of the consumer goods that see an increase of, you know, maybe 1 to 2%, where footwear sees an average increase of like 11%. So, you know, that to me is just like, I don't know. It's crazy. Like in your example of like, you know, we're thinking about it from a footwear perspective, but it's also great to have an organization like this that's gathering these companies and saying, look, this is going to hurt all of us rather than like stepping away and looking at it like, well, you know, generally the whole tariff is going to cost us 1 to 2%. Having an organization like the FDRA basically is like, hey, whoa, 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 like pump the brakes. This is going to hurt everybody by, you know, 10 to 12%. And, you know, I think like there's huge value in that. So it's cool. You know, my takeaway from it is like, I don't know a lot of these organizations because they're more behind the scenes, right? Like you get to work with certain organizations or you get put into contact with people from these organizations when you work for, you know, let's say like when I work for Finish Line is when I first found out about this organization. And there's a bunch of them out there that do a lot of cool things. There's a lot of, there's even organizations that do things where like you can donate to them and they turn around and take that to basically support the people that either lost their jobs within the footwear business. I can't think of the name of it, but like there's a specific one that's in the back of my mind. But anyway, I don't know. I'm without getting too political, this whole article is like scary as hell for someone who makes like my entire income comes from working in the footwear business. But also like it makes me thankful that there's an organization out there that's going and kind of paying attention to it, because I think that's the other problem is like the brands, the people that are at the brands, the, you know, yeah, we see all this political stuff and most of us are so tired of seeing it at this point that we try to ignore it as best as possible. But a lot of this stuff could affect us in ways that we don't think. So to Robbie's point, I think, you know, if there's anything you take away from listening to this episode, keep an eye out and see where you see things like this actually making an impact. Where do you see prices rising? Where do you see potentially like stocks falling or investors, you know, backing out of things? Because all of these little things end up impacting all this, you know, whole huge culture that we kind of love. So,
yeah, go listen to Childish Gambino and just like listen to Redbone and just, like pictures into every place he talks about women, and it's like the same thing. So.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, I guess so, you know, putting it out there to everybody that is listening, what do you think about this kind of stuff? Do you want to hear us talk more about it? What are your thoughts on this particular situation, like about the tariffs? I mean, I want to assume that everybody that's listening to this enjoys buying sneakers at a decent price, even though a lot of them, you know, we probably all wish were a little cheaper. This just seems to be something that's going to cost all of us a lot more in the long run. But what do you think? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm making an assumption for everybody that's listening and everybody's not on the same page as me when it comes to this kind of stuff. So, but that said, let's throw out some sneaker picks for this episode and, we'll get out of here and we'll move on to, episode 21 next time. Damn.
Woo. All right. So who wants to go first? Nick, you going to go first or?
It's split.
You know, I kind of already gave away mine because I'm probably going to go with those Hot Lava Tech Challenge 2s. I just love that shoe. I was a big fan of Andre Agassi when I was a kid, and I just thought that, like, the rebelliousness of him and kind of the you know, stuck-up nature of tennis. Sorry, guys, that I know some of you guys really like tennis. But I think that tennis as a sport has always had this.
For 10 years.
Yeah, well, tennis as a sport has always had this arrogance about it, and I think that Andre Agassi had like a kind of like rebellious nature to him that sort of broke that down for a little while. But you still see it, you know. I mean, even with like Serena and stuff this last year with all the drama that happened, it was just like what. But anyway, sorry, that's a whole other rabbit hole to go down for another episode. No, I have nothing against the sport of tennis. I just think that professional tennis is very close-minded. That's how I should say it.
It is. I can agree with that. But to stay on that same sport, as we were doing a little research today, I came across another Nike basketball by Nike tennis collaboration, which is the Nike Zoom Vapor glove. They took the Zoom Vapor sole and put the Gary Payton glove on top of it. It's going to be releasing, as far as I know, I think only maybe in women's sizes, but it is super cool. It has a whole like zipper shroud, the monkey paw technology on the upper, which you can just put them on the tennis court.
They have some Frankenstein stuff.
I dig it. Hey, that's, man, dope.
So I'm different. I love it.
So, I mean, I don't know if what I'm about to say is hype piece, but the 96 snakeskin Air Force One, like, I guess people that would identify as a hype piece don't even know what that shoe is. Like, any real Air Force One collector, like, if you've been about the Air Force One life, like, you've wanted that shoe. And it's just so clean. Like, I'm a sucker for a little bit of snakeskin. It has to be done a certain way. And this is one of those certain, this certain way has to be feeling a certain way. So this is going to be my, I'm not going to buy them. Because I'm doing super good about not paying for shoes right now. I'm like going to ride that wave heavy. But if these came across my, like, I love them. They look good. This is when, like, sneakers become art to some people, because that's just like an artistic rendition of Air Force One. So beautiful shoe. Beautiful.
Yeah, that is pretty good. And I just want to say, this is a safe space for hype beasts and hype beast thoughts, and no shame. No shame.
We'll educate you. We'll put the butterfly knives away and we'll educate you.
No judgment here.
Yeah,
no
yeah.
Judgment.
I mean, that pretty much wraps up. I don't know where we go from there. So thank you all for listening.
If anybody knows Photoshop really well and can, like, do the Anchorman fight scene with, like, all the different groups of, like, new scenes with all the different weapons, but, like, do shoe groups.
There you go.
I'd love you. I don't have a gift for you for doing that, but that'd be cool.
We'll post on Instagram for you then.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Oh, man. Yeah, well, thank you all for listening. Before we get out of here, my name's Nick Engvall. You can find me on all platforms at Nick Engvall, NickEngvall, at Sneaker History on all platforms. Guys, let them know how they can find you.
You guys can find me on Instagram, Twitter, under MadWatcher789. And when I'm not there, I'm in a corner crying because I keep losing these Jordan 1 raffles. Wobby, where can they find you?
Man, you can find me on Titan 2. Thanos hired me as his garden worker, so out here picking produce. But when I'm on my breaks, I'm on the internet on Earth, and I can be reached at RAHBEE702 on all major platforms.
Right on. All right, well, we'll catch you next time. Thanks again for listening. Peace.
Thank you.
Hey, what up, guys? This is Nick again. Before you take off, I just want to let you know a couple things we're working on here at Sneaker History. We're about to start a weekly newsletter to share some of the things that we find from around the web that's interesting, entertaining, newsworthy stuff. And instead of putting it all on social, maybe it's not worth posting on the blog, but we wanted it to just be on your radar. So it's kind of like a compilation of our favorite things from the week. And we'll be sending that out on Sundays just to make sure that you have the news from the previous week and maybe some news about the upcoming week in terms of releases, you know, changes in release dates, etc. You can sign up for that now at sneakerhistory.com. The second thing is that we finally launched a web store to sell some Sneaker History merchandise. So far, we've got some tees, stickers, coffee mugs, and some other goods in the works. And the money we make from this will go to pay for hosting and production of things like this podcast. You can find that on the top right menu of our website. If you do cop some merch, be sure to tag us in your social posts so we can repost. Thanks again for all your support, and we'll catch you next time. Hey, hey, Nick here again. Before you take off, I want to thank you for listening to the Sneaker History Podcast. Be sure to hop into our Discord to answer this episode's The Last Shot question and get to know our community of sneaker enthusiasts. If you'd like more insights on the trending topics in the sneaker world, I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly two decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter. And last but not least, tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a simple compliment can take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Thank you for all the support, and we will catch you on the next episode. Peace.